passe un super artiste, super encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot!
Sagosen, Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Hello and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour for a bumper Champions League episode. The Champions League has kicked back into action. It's about to start hitting the crescendo, so we thought we'd spend a whole episode talking about the teams, how it lines up in the groups to go into the playoffs. It's Alex Kulesh here, and I'm joined by Chris O'Reilly this time around. How are you doing, Chris?
Hello, Alex. I'm good, thanks. And yeah, happy to talk a little Champions League with you. We've got a couple of interviews coming up later on as well from a pair of Magdeburg heroes in Gisli Christiansen and Bennett Wiegert. And I think we haven't in recent episodes been plugging Patreon a lot, Alex. So I want you to do that nice and early here. And we're going to tease the audience with other fun things coming up. But give us your Patreon plug.
The Patreon is the best handball community on the planet, on the internet. Our Patreon, patreon.com/handballhour, where you can join for bonus contents. We bring you a bonus episode every week. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer, but it's always fun. Then we have our amazing community in our Discord who discuss lots of interesting things. And, you know, the Discord has been great for us because some people in there are, you know, they might know a player. We get like insights into teams, insights into what's happening, like a third source. So following all the games and actions and, of course, all the bonus episodes, including one special interview, which we have coming up, which may be for Patreon listeners only. We'll decide. Oh, we'll decide.
Oh, that's big. It could be so big that maybe maybe we should make it public. But we'll see.
Maybe.
And we haven't recorded it yet, so we're not going to mention who that's with, but it is hopefully coming up in the next few days to be released. Maybe an early release for the Patreon.
Could be an early release.
At the very least for them. I have another format for the Patreon that I'm going to pitch to you. I'm not, again, promising something here that hasn't happened yet, but it could be another new series coming up in the following weeks and months if Alex gives it the green light and Brian gives it the green light. So if you hear nothing new besides the weekly morning clubs, you'll know that my idea was terrible.
And you're not going to pitch it live. Yeah. I have not heard this idea, by the way, to everyone.
I won't pitch it live.
Well,
it'll be a surprise for people on Patreon if it happens.
It'll be a surprise for people on Patreon, and we can tell you. I'll actually write in the Discord if the idea is shut down, what the idea was. So join our Patreon for just $3 a month, $3 equivalent of your currency a month. You get access to all that bonus content. You get access to our Discord and lots of exciting stuff coming up throughout the season. So, yeah, join the many people who have signed up and stuck around since the European Championship. So everyone who is a Patreon member, thanks so much for supporting us. It gives us energy to do these podcasts more and more.
Let's talk a little bit of Men's Champions League. We just had the penultimate round completed earlier this week. We're recording on a Sunday night here. And we should start with Match of the Week. And it's always nice when a Match of the Week is actually the match of the week. And that was the case with Magdeburg and Barca. A really just a fun, proper handball game, you know. It was beautiful at times. It was messy at times. It was two of the best teams in the world just going at it. And what I really like about looking back at these games with you, Alex, is that you've watched this more recently than I have. So I was there live, but there's always a very different experience when you're working at it live and commentating to somebody who can watch it in the cold light of day. So what would you like to talk about?
Let's start going through it. So the game finished 29 Magdeburg, 28 Barcelona. So actually a huge victory for Magdeburg, which puts them in a good position for an automatic qualification into the quarterfinal. Really important game to stay ahead of Veszprém. They're level with Barcelona on 22 points and Veszprém behind them on 20 points. And Magdeburg are just, they're Barca killers. They have something against, something that really allows them to take on Barcelona and beat them time and time again. And this time around, again, Barca came out ahead and they were the better team in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what really struck me throughout the whole game is, even though Barca were ahead and they were looking like the better team, it never looked like Magdeburg were too panicked. And there were times where things really just didn't work out for them. And they were trailing by 3-4 goals at a couple of different points. But you always get this feeling with them that they'll find a way back, which is a huge thing, I think. I'm pretty sure the players noticed that as well on both sides, that even if Barca are leading by 3 or 4 against 99% of teams, it's, you know, good night, Irene, it's over. But with Magdeburg, there's something about them. The atmosphere, I think, played a little bit of a part of that as well. It was a proper almost Balkan atmosphere.
There was a lot of booing.
A lot of booing, a lot of whistling. The fans were just, you know, getting stuck into it. But Barca, yeah, you have to give them a lot of credit in the first half because, you know, on paper as well, they were the better team. By on paper, I mean the stats. Like the goalkeeper battle, Emil Nielsen was winning comfortably. He was by far and away the best goalkeeper of the three that were in action in the first half. They were taking their chances really well. The one kind of down for them was that they were turning the ball over a few too many times. And I said it earlier that it was a bit of a messy game from both sides. And when that happens, you know that things can turn quite quickly because how quick these teams play, you know, you score one goal, a team turns it over or takes a rush shot, which happened a few times for Barca, where they were looking to get the quick goal back and they just rocketed it over the crossbar. And so the stats didn't really tell the whole story there because Barca were turning the ball over, wasting a few chances in attack. And although Magdeburg were missing more, they scored enough to at least be back within one by halftime. And it was that crucial kind of 23 to 30 minute mark where you really, it can go either way in the game. It's Barca ahead by a couple. They could take that next level and make it a 6-goal game, or Magdeburg can scrap their way back in within one or two and really give themselves a chance in the second half. And it was the latter that they managed to do, even though I think they said themselves afterwards they weren't playing very well.
They were just missing chances. And it was Emil Nielsen who had about 10 saves. He had 10 saves in the first half. He was really shutting them down. The Magdeburg players kept breaking through, but shooting while receiving contact. So the shot is never like too powerful. And Emil Nielsen was just ready for those awkward shots that all of these kind of smaller Magdeburg players, especially Klar, who he did keep breaking through and just missing the goal at times. It was really, really strange to see. But I think that was because Emil Nielsen essentially intimidated those Magdeburg back players. And again, Barca were in the lead. They seemed quite comfortable in the second half as well. But like, they're missing something in that backcourt. And it's just, it's a bit sluggish. It's a bit big. It's a bit kind of, it's not as fluid. It's big, right?
It's the back. It's a team full of left and right backs.
Yeah.
And not playmakers.
Exactly. So Melvin Richardson was playing as the playmaker. He started as the playmaker. And remember last podcast, it may have been a Morning Club, where we talked about Fuchs of Berlin and how having a left-handed playmaker has really unleashed Gisel, because you can have this symbiotic relationship where they're really, you know, both of them are playing right back and playmaker simultaneously, you know, changing roles. You would think that something similar would happen for Barca, having Melvin Richardson and Deacon Mem, but it doesn't flow as well. I think neither player is tricky enough, essentially. They're quite you know, they're athletic, they have amazing skills, they get a bit of momentum and they're absolute killer, but they don't have that little bit of, you know, a little bit of a shoulder change to throw people off and make it into a real two-man game. So Dikemen still had a very good first half, but then in the second half, he was completely shut down. And on the other side, you have like Engason and Karlsvorgård. These are big dudes, big trundling dudes. And, you know, they're missing Lucas Indrich a lot, I think, this season.
Missing him, missing Domen Makritz as well, which, yeah, you know, that's... he's still part of the club, but injured at the moment. And I would have looked, you know, at some point, maybe throw in Blaž Janssen there, because he would describe the player, if we're thinking of a left-hander who could fill that role. In my mind, it would be Blaž Janssen, but here's a guy who's basically only getting to play half the game if he's lucky, because Aleš Gomez is
just too good,
the main man.
He's just too good.
So, I mean, and that's fine. Yeah. But like Blaž can play in the backcourt as well. And so, yeah, it feels like a little. I mean, this was, and this is a situation which Bennett speaks about in the interview later, that it was really one of the first times that Barca have been in a game this season where they really have to win. And that brings up questions about just how much they trust the young playmakers in Paul Valera and Petar Sukuša. So Valera was 0 from 2, got a bit of time at the start of the second half, wasn't really working. Sukuša came on really late and scored a goal.
Yeah, no, that was incredible. It was the crucial goal.
It maybe needs more time. Yeah, it was a crucial goal. It drew them level, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was right at the end. And Petar Sukuša, who was not playing the whole game, 18-year-old, gets brought on for one final, like the final attack that Barca had when they were actually down 28-27. And he just did something dramatic, broke through completely, looked amazing, and scored. And previous to that, he actually played a really nice pass to the line that it just looked dynamic. And I think maybe they're waiting for these Sukuša twins to grow up a little bit before really throwing them in into the fire. But, you know, there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, I guess it's a good lesson. I mean, it's not the end of the world for Barca, this loss. They probably still will top the group. And maybe they've learned a lesson about the Sukuša being able to go in the big time here and won't be afraid anyway to take on those chances.
Yeah, and I feel like we're burying the lead here. We've talked about this game, but the real story had to be, I guess, Christiansen. Yeah. He came back it felt like out of nowhere, because he had that long injury after the Final Four. Then he had another injury for the EHF Euro. And I'd kind of forgotten about him slightly. and he just came on in the second half and was incredible. Mm-hmm. Culminating, so he got 5 goals or 6 goals potentially. It was 6.
6, yeah, 5 in the second half. He got one just before the break. In his first moment of action, that he really got to play in the second half and scored 5 more.
6 goals and the game winner, a jump shot of all players to take a 9-meter jump shot winner in the last second, Gisli Christiansen with his gammy shoulder is the one who breaks Barcelona hearts, and the crowd went wild. But like, you just forget this, you know, we've been talking about how good Magdeburg are, and their best player hasn't played all season.
He really does. In that the way they play there, that you notice the difference. Like, Klar is fantastic at what he does, and he plays in a different way. Smarrison is fantastic in what he does. The two of them combine so well. But Gisli Christiansen just has that little bit extra. Like, you just notice when he's on, it's like, okay, he is like that bit quicker, both in body and in mind. And it is like that second half performance was remarkable when you consider that was his first proper Champions League game of the season, which he talks about as well. And I don't know if they would have done it without him. And I'm not sure if they had planned to use him as much as he was used in the end, but he's a guy, once he's on, he's just going to throw himself into it. And I'm just amazed, like, with everything he's gone through over the last year, that he still plays as fearlessly as that, because he has no off button. He has no, like, first or second gear. He's just full throttle. And, yeah, I think that was a very special second half performance. With 10 minutes left to play, I gave him the Player of the Match award, and there was still a lot of handball to be played there, but they wouldn't be in this situation without him. And I was like, okay, I think he's going to do this. So I was really
good,
happy.
Good call. That was
he banged in that winner, you know, because otherwise, if Barca had won it, I think my first half pick was Emil Nielsen, but then I was like, you know what? Luis Frades had a fantastic game. Maybe he's the player of the match, but he's not a sexy choice, you know. But Gisli Christiansen.
That's a good call. Well, should we hear from him? You spoke to him after the game.
Yes.
So let the man tell us about his comeback.
Yeah, we'll have two short interviews back to back. Gisli Christiansen, the match winner, first of all, and then Magdeburg coach Bennett Vegers. Gisli, congratulations. What a performance in that second half. I want to ask you about the very end first. Let's start at the end and that final attack. I heard up in the commentary booth the instructions given to you, and that you had at least heard half the plan, that there would be a Kempe at the end of it, if necessary, but it all kind of fell apart.
It was planned that the wing will follow our wing, and then I could make an easy pass to Felix. But since the wing did not follow our wing, then everything fell apart, as you said. And then I needed to be creative and shoot. And I think it was not at all the plan for Benno to have a shoot from outside 9 meters. That's basically never our plan. But today it worked to win Barca, and I'm just really happy that we showed, like I said earlier, this charactership, because we were always behind, and I'm really proud of the team that we showed this.
It was a brilliant comeback from four down, and I think it shows when two teams like this, the level both you and Barca are capable of, how quickly it can turn around as well. I guess that's part of the belief as well, knowing that for things can shift so quickly.
For sure. Barca is, of course, fantastic team. And I also want to say, like, we created a lot of open chances and a lot of good chances, and but I don't need to tell anyone how good the goalkeepers from Barca are. Emil and Perez, just incredible. I think we also have three missed 7 meters. These little things count in the end against a team, against Barca. But today, we somehow managed to win, and I just now need to, as happy as I am now, I need to be quick to go down, because we have not in 48 hours an incredible tough match against Gummersbach, and we have a 7-hour bus ride tomorrow. And that's
the daily life of Bundesliga players.
How it is to be a professional. We need to act like professionals now. We need to go in the ice baths to get a massage and all these things that make us professionals.
Talk to me about your own physicality at the moment. How are you feeling? Because this is
it's
almost like your Champions League debut this season, right? You've been involved in a couple of games, but
That's true. I've been taking a part in, I think, against Celje. I played some minutes, but I think this today was like really my first game, like, in my head, because I have not been feeling well in my foot, and my foot has been like not 100%.
It was from the Euro.
I had some bone bruise, and then I had some other things that come alongside with a foot injury, and it's it's been a difficult time because I've needed to be patient, and although the boys have been doing it really good, I'm really happy to be, you know, like really, really there for the boys, not like getting some, you know, getting, you know, like minutes where it, where I'm, where I'm needed, where the team really needs me, you know, and that's why I'm happy to be like, yeah.
I think you really showed when you're on court as well. You don't do it by half. You don't ease your way into the game. You're at 100% straight away, and that's a big big stress on the on the body as well. But it seems to, I mean, we know what crazy things you've done over the last year or so, but it seems to have no impact on you.
I know it sounds cliche, but it's all or nothing. That's how I am. When I'm in the squad, I'm never like in the squad to be like on the, just on the bench and not take a part, you know. If I'm in the squad, I'm always ready to like take a part and be 100% for the team, you know. That's why I'm although more happy to like to be in the squad today and come on and to make such a big effort to have the boys to win this really important victory against Barca.
And just finally then, you mentioned you got the big game coming up against Gummersbach, and you know how heavy this Bundesliga schedule is. You've got the game against West Brom next week as well that will basically decide who finishes in the top two, and I guess interlinked shows how important it is to finish in that top two and give yourselves a bit of a break.
Of course. That's really, of course, they're really, really important. And I think everybody knows how, like I told you, I don't need to tell anyone how hard it is to win in West Brom. And it's like one of the most difficult arena to get points in and win and but everything is possible. We can of course win there, and we have to believe that we can win there, and anything can happen.
Go wrap yourself in ice.
Thank you.
So Benedict, you've had a few minutes, I guess, to decompress after that incredible comeback in the second half. What's going through your mind now?
I think that's not the right words. Incredible comeback. Not too often do we have the chance after a 3-goal behind Barca to have the chance to give it back. But I think the most important thing maybe was our belief in our performance, our trust in our quality. And at the end of the game, you have a little bit luck. You need it. You need it in handball. That sport. The trust and the belief was fantastic to see. The atmosphere, the spectators. I think whole Magdeburg is really happy tonight. But in my coaching mind, I think we have the possibility to play better handball, especially at the first time. We have so much open shots, and Amy and Perez de Vargas make a fantastic job, but that can be break us sometimes. Today, it was not the thing. And yeah, we have to be happy about the 2 points.
I think I heard you saying that you took an early timeout in that second half, and you were saying that's not what we agreed on. That's not what we discussed at halftime.
Yeah,
to the guys.
Of course.
What do you think really switched on? What did they do that you agreed on at halftime?
It's difficult to explain directly after the tough match, but I think the halftime result was really good for us because we missed so many open shots, and we start with ball. And I hope we have the chance to make whole pressure at start of the first half of Barca, because the big thing that Barca not too often have is stress and matches. Liga Asobal, Barca is really dominated in his league. And we know the situations to have close games. And this can be a big point for us tonight. To know the feeling, to have close games and manage it better like Barca today.
Well, is there anything in particular in the second half? You mentioned the belief, but is there anything tactics-wise or the playing-wise that really,
not a question of tactics.
That really pleased you in that second half?
Maybe. Yeah, it's difficult. Let me watch and analyze.
You're feeling the, all the emotions, whole game.
Then, yeah. My feeling is only emotions now. Only happy emotions. I'm really happy for the city. It's important for the city. Maybe as for us as a team. For us are only 2 points in a group force. Of course, important points. Yeah, but the situation for us in Veszprém is the same like before. We have to win. We need the points in Veszprém, and Veszprém is also one of the best teams in Europe right now. That's difficult. But to see the people, the spectators after that game, how happy can be Magdeburg after a win against Barca? That's a special feeling tonight.
I think that says a lot about you as a man who's grown up here as well.
Of course. We have so many years without Champions League, without big names in Magdeburg. I don't know. I don't remember me now. How long is the time goes on that Barca plays?
2005 is the last time.
Yeah, wow, that's unbelievable, and that's great. That's great for our small city, but small, really Handball city, in my opinion.
Of course. I was speaking to Gisli there, and he mentioned about how important the potential to skip the playoff is. Mm-hmm. Considering the Bundesliga schedule, you know, you're going to come back in a couple
tough.
Of days.
It's tough.
It's non-stop. In your mind at the moment, are you also with your squad trying to think about how to use players or give guys a bit of a rest at this stage, or is there just no chance with the intensity of the schedule?
We will see what's happened. It's a tough schedule right now. That's not the question. I think we have only 48 hours to go for important points in Gummersbach, and this is really tough to have a match in the Schwalbe Arena sold out again. Everybody in away arenas so that we lose in that's normally that's tough, but it's a big compliment for our performance the last years, and now we have to go. We have a good squad to manage it, but maybe it's more easy for Barca to manage a schedule like a Bundesliga team like THW Kiel and us especially.
You got the win tonight.
Hope to see you again in Magdeburg. Yes, it was not the last time. All the best.
Thank you to Gisli and Bennett. Bennett Vigard there saying in the interview, like, just pure emotions, living off vibes. He could barely remember, like, he was like, tactics? Nah, that was emotion, that game, you know? And it's just, it really came across, I think, in the chat as well, how much he wants to bring these moments to Magdeburg. He's brought this city, like his city, so much success, but he really wants, you know, Champions League to be a thing for the people of Magdeburg, and he definitely did that, like bringing Barca to town and beating them in a game like that. That was a special occasion. You mentioned there all the whistling and booing, like that was it was proper stuff, but over the top at times, because literally every single decision, even if it was the right one, was being greeted with whistles and boos.
Yeah.
And the poor referees, they were being, they were getting some abuse after the game, that's for sure.
Funny enough, when I was watching the game, I think the referees were actually better towards Magdeburg than Barcelona. I think Barcelona were the ones that were more likely to be angry with the referee with some relatively dodgy decisions, but there was the Magdeburg fans
Magdeburg fans were just they got to a point where it's like, we don't care what you're whistling here, everything is going to be greeted with. It was pure psychological warfare.
And I have to say, I'm disappointed in Bennett Vigard, because I thought he was going to shave the beard fully off, because the beard that he grew for the win streak, he said he wouldn't shave it until Magdeburg lost, and they did that finally against Hannover Burgdorf a couple of weeks ago, and I was expecting him to go fully shaved, but the man loves his beard.
Yeah, he does, and the current incarnation of it looks good. I have a feeling it's probably bad for your skin if you completely remove it in one go. It was pretty bushy. I'd say like a gradual trimming down is probably what what he needs. I'm guessing it was a case of, after having it that long, it was he let his wife decide what length it should be, and that's the way to stay for a while, because she had to deal with that big thing for, what was it, from September until a couple of weeks ago. That was that's a long time. But at the end of the day, Magdeburg getting a big win there, but as Bennett said himself, it doesn't change their task heading into the final round of games against Veszprém. They need to get a result, whether it be a draw or a victory, to stay ahead of them. And you imagine that Barca will get the job done at home against Montpellier. It won't be an easy game, but if they do, then Magdeburg need to basically avoid defeat away to Veszprém to make sure that they get into the top two. And for Magdeburg, more than any other team except for Kiel, staying out of those playoffs, getting the direct ticket to the quarterfinals is massive.
And I think it's huge, because the team that finishes third in Group B may be playing the most informed team in handball, RK Zagreb. They could be coming up against giant killers, RK Zagreb. So it is an absolute trap game.
That's what I thought as well. But the most formed team in the world, Zagreb, are so good now, they've moved up to fifth. And they moved ahead of Szeged. So they may...
They are ahead of Szeged.
So yeah.
You know what? It's crazy, but yeah, right now Zagreb could finish third in Group A.
It's remarkable.
This is a Zagreb team which went through years of not winning a Champions League game, showed some signs of revival last year, and this year they've just beaten PSG at home in the Zagreb Arena in front of 15,000 fans, which is a sensational turnaround for Zagreb and for Croatian handball. And it feels like Croatian handball has this impetus right now. It's great to see this kind of new lease of life for Croatian handball, which we saw in the EHF Euro, this new generation coming through, despite their kind of disappointing result in the end. There is still kind of this new generation, new hope. Zagreb is back to the, you know, to the highest levels of European handball. And we didn't mention this, but Dagur Sigurdsson has been announced as the future coach for Croatia, which I think signifies intent from the Croatian Federation. You know, I think Zagreb and Croatian handball are kind of intrinsically linked. You know, if the Croatian Handball Federation is deciding that they're, you know, putting money into a top coach like Dagur Sigurdsson to lead,
and the first non-Croatian coach as well, which
yeah,
is massive.
First non-Croatian coach. Of course, he won the EHF Euro with Germany. Huge achievement, and has done incredible work with Japan, to be honest. And I'm just very surprised that he's leaving Japan immediately.
Before the Olympics,
which he's qualified them for, built them for. And I don't know what the story is. Like, it must be some sort of
big compensation package. It's like, no, Dagur, we need you right now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We really respect your work, and this is how much we respect it.
And for Zagreb, they've made some big contract extensions. So Matej Mandić in goals, a really incredible young goalkeeper. He has extended until 2026. I think Zvonimir Serna and Klarica also, two talented young players also with extensions. And I just want to repeat this. Like, I don't think people realize what happened here. Zagreb beat PSG 28-26. It's just nuts.
And the final minutes of that game was really spectacular. 26-24 down. And to score four on the trot there to snatch the win, it's such a big win as well. It says a lot about the mentality of this young team. And about the contract extensions, that is such a different path to what, let's say, the last good Zagreb team did. I mean, if we go back, you know, 10 years, 7 years ago, when Zagreb were doing okay in Europe, once they had a 21, 22-year-old that they were blooding in Europe, they were shifted on to the Bundesliga or to Vesprem or to Płock or to someone who were going to like basically give them money for those players. And it was like there was no way to hold on to them. So they were just like, okay, we're going to ship them off and we'll see what the next batch of players do. But the fact that they're holding on to those players is a real signal of intent. And I'm here for it. Finally, I think this is the first time in a few years I would be happy to go to Arena Zagreb, a place which, when it's full, is amazing, but often is not full and is not amazing. But I'm ready to go back and experience 15,000 fans for a playoff or a quarterfinal in the coming weeks. That would be brilliant. And in a time where clubs from the Balkan region are like losing their power on the whole in the last few years, and the, you know, the dynamics of handball in Europe are shifting more central and northern Europe, it's really nice to see Zagreb revive like that.
And the results in the Champions League at home this season are that victory against Paris Saint-Germain. They have a 5-goal win against Szeged. They have a draw against Aalborg. They have a draw against Kielce. They have an 11-goal win against Kolstad and a 9-goal win over Pelister. Which means that, you know, no matter what team is going to be playing them, they're going to have one really, really difficult game. It's incredible. And the funniest thing is that it's still Ivan Čupić who's kind of leading this team. The, like, little potbelly Ivan Čupić, who is, like, he does not look like an athlete, but he knows the game so well. He's just such an old head that he can continue to be an impactful player at the highest level, even with no physical ability left, essentially.
And along those same lines, did you see who's returning? Another right winger, Zlatko Horvat, 39 years of age. And I don't know, is he going back next season or has he already come back? Ah, okay, there we go. Comeback of Zlatko Horvat. After 4 years of absence, the kid of the club, Zlatko Horvat, is coming back to Zagreb. The 40-year-old left-hander, he's even older than that, was part of the club from 2002 to 2020. Then he went to Metalurg in Skopje. Then he moved to Dabas in Hungary. Yeah, but it's still, and that was from Zsika Bogdanovic and Handball Planet, but it hasn't mentioned specifically whether he is coming right now or next season. I'm either way great that Zlatko Horvat is also coming back. It's a place where the evergreen wingers will live on forever. And we include Timur Dibrov in there as well.
That's very true. And it'd be really interesting to see what they do next year. How, you know, they've extended some players, but they let's see what they do. And I think they probably felt the pressure from Nexa breathing down their neck in the Croatian Championship. So they've come back into it. But yeah, incredible win against PSG. And I think it's time to start getting worried about PSG. I think PSG are done this season.
Oh, this season? Okay. Yeah.
They're watching their team, and especially their backcourt, with the injury of Dominic Mathe, Dominic Mathe, I'm not sure if this is actually fully made public. It's been kind of hidden by PSG. Apparently, his knee rejected the ACL surgery that he had. So he's gone for the season and maybe even next year for a while when he moves to Kielce. So Dominic Mathe is not playing at right back. You have Kent Robin Tunnensen at right back, who was, you know, years past his best. He's been past his best for a long time now. And on left back, they have Karabatic, who, you know, he's a 40-year-old man. And when you look at Luke Steins and what you need for Luke Steins to really flourish, like with the Netherlands, you have Kai Smits behind him, beside him. explosive, direct player, and or Danny Byans, and they just like work in this beautiful motion, bing, bang, bing, bang. And you have, what, Karabatic, who has no speed, Tonnensen, who has no speed, either side of him, and Luke Steins is just running around without actually making any headway. And it's causing them, and you know, they do have Prandi on a left back, who is a talented player, but he takes up a lot of space. He comes in and kind of takes up a lot of space and time. He, you know, he does slow things down. He has a big shot. He might get in and out, but he's not speedy in and out. And then lastly, Jakob Holm has been an absolute disaster signing for him.
What do you make of that? What's going on here?
The issue is they can't defend with Jakob Holm on the court, because if you have Luke Steins on the court, you also have Kamil Shipchak, who has to come off. Luke Steins has to be hidden. So Jakob Holm is... then you're making two defensive substitutions from kind of the other side of the court, which is, you know, that really doesn't work. You know, that they're blessed to have Grabiel playing on the wing, who can also be the center block defender and number three defender. But he's also not, like, Grabiel can do it. It's like he is a winger who can play center defender, but he's not one of the best center defenders around. Like, you might have a line player being there that stays on. And Luka Karabatic has taken a step back as well on the lines. So it just feels like the squad is in a complete mess right now. It really doesn't... it's just completely misshapen, not fit for purpose. Like, if you're really creating a team for Luke Steins to rule and take forward, which is, I think they know that. They know that Luke Steins is their best player. He's been MVP in France for the last two seasons. He has been their best player in the Champions League. He's brought them as far as he can. And this season, the squad is just not fit for purpose for Luke Steins. Next season, things change. Next season, Danny Byans comes in, which... strange signing, to be honest. But, you know, it brings dynamism into that backcourt. And you have Yahya Omar coming in at right back. So you have, that's a dynamic, fast, exciting backcourt. But not Tonnensen and Karabatic. That is not your dynamic, fast, exciting backcourt.
They also are bringing in, the rumour is, Carl Cronan. Ooh, and there's your defender right there.
And there's your defender, yeah.
There is a player they could potentially bring on loan, because he won't be playing Champions League for the rest of this season. Former PSG player Sander Sagosen. As Kolstad are done. Stick a fork in them, they're done.
Who knew that... they would just be... we kind of talked about it as a group of death, right? But, mm-hmm. You know, the real death was Kolstad's chances of staying as a club. Okay, maybe that's a bit harsh.
All right, Brian Campion.
Well, true. I really feel like we need Brian to come on. Maybe he can just send a voice note. But it's sad that they haven't been able to qualify, I think. It shows the quality of the teams ahead of them. I think they probably would have qualified in the other group. I Kolstad were a good team at times, and then they obviously had injuries like Magnus Rudd, but they're kicking him out of the club immediately, sending him off to Szeged. Just like, we're not... we don't want the heartache. We don't want the Rudd heartache constantly. Because they look good with him on the court. They really did.
That is the story of this season, I think. It's you know, Kolstad with Magnus Rudd and Kolstad without Magnus Rudd. And, you know, we just have to cast our mind back not too far, back to the 22nd of November, the beginning of the second half of this group phase, where they had beaten PSG at home, drew with them away, and before that had beaten Kiel at home, had beaten Szeged at home, and had also got a win over Pellister. So their win-loss record was very much in the positive, and then it just... it didn't fall apart, until they came back after the winter, because they got smacked by Aalborg, but then just lost by 1 against Kiel, by 2 against Szeged, and then Zagreb. That was
disaster.
That Zagreb. Was it. That, I mean, we said that was going to be a crucial game a few weeks ago, and that just showed like the two teams kind of passing each other, two ships in the night, one going to port, one sinking to the bottom of the ocean. that was it. It is quite sad, and I think most people wanted to see it succeed in some way. I mean, it may still do. We're talking about it like it's going to fold now. That's not necessarily the case. And, you know, success, like two more games or four more games in the Champions League max maybe doesn't make or break this club. You know, I think domestic success again this season would make the difference. And they bounced back and won the Norwegian Cup a few days after losing that game to Zagreb. But they do need to figure out some signings for next season, because just having Sanders Augustsson and Torbjørn Bergerud and Sigvaldi Gudjonsson is not enough.
You know, they have had the emergence of Simon Lise at left back. He's actually become, he's quite impressive. He's still young, 24 years old, so there's a bit of hope there. And yeah, but quite disappointed in Sagason, to be honest. It was that game against Szeged. I think that was even more crucial than the Croatia loss, than the Zagreb loss, because I think after they lost to Szeged in a close fashion, they kind of crumbled. And then, you know, that game against Kielce, a Kielce team that has just been torn apart by injuries, that had Dylan Nahy scoring goals from the line. He got 6 goals, but I think 4 of them were from the line. And that was replacing for Karolek. And I think Dylan Nahy should just pursue being a line player.
If there was ever a player who just like always in his life didn't want to be a wing, it was Dylan Nahy. It's like, you can see it in the way he plays. He's just like, I'll play anywhere. Come on, just give me the ball. I want to play.
And like Morito playing right back. Wolf had a very good game, so he's back for Kielce. But it was a big win for Kielce, because if they had lost to Kolstad, Kielce would be essentially be at risk of going out of the competition, which is something that we probably wouldn't have expected from last season. But they've just been so ravaged by injuries, including Simon Stichko, who is kind of out for long term now. Quite recently, yeah. I saw an overview of their injuries, and I think only 4 of their 20 registered players have not had injuries this season. Which it's tough to fight through, but it makes it a really interesting playoffs, I think. Yeah. In Group A, we've got, you know, Kiel and Aalborg have qualified for the quarterfinal. Then in Group B, it's going to be one of Barcelona, Magdeburg, and West Brom. But then all the other teams, they'll want to, you know, jostle for positions in this.
Well, yeah, here's my question for you on that. Because, you know, the way you've just talked about Zagreb, who are 5th in Group A, and Kielce, who are 4th in Group A, at the moment, things can really mix around in the last round of games. If you're Gyorgy and Montpellier, currently in 5th and 4th in Group B, sounds to me like you might prefer to play against Kielce in a playoff, and therefore finish lower.
That's always a
tricky math.
It's a dangerous game to play.
But you, Alex, would you prefer to play against Kielce and Dylan Nahy on the line, or best team in the world, Zagreb?
Well, there is a little bit of time between the last game and the playoffs, so Kielce could get a little bit healthier. But best team in the world, Zagreb, are for middle of fourth. So I think the teams in that Group A are probably looking and at their competition and not being too worried about whether they play Montpellier, Gyorgy, Plotsk, or Porto, who are the only position that's actually still up for grabs in the playoff round, is whether Visa Plotsk or Porto progress at the bottom. They're playing each other in the last round, which is that's a really nice game. So like that's our knockout round.
I'm a little bit worried about hyping up the playoff round because we did this last year and it turned out to be an absolute disaster. But overall, I think it says about this season as a whole that it's not been as clear cut as last season's. And it's all the better for it.
Yeah, and I would even say, you know, we've had for years now, like kind of four sides or at least two or three teams who have just been heads and shoulders above the rest. And that has been Barcelona, Chelsea, and actually PSG. For years, those three teams have constantly been the teams to beat. And all of them are looking beatable. Chelsea are they're a wounded animal at the moment. Anything can happen. PSG, really not a top game. And Barcelona are just not as formidable as they were. And then kind of looking at Magdeburg and Veszprem, they're the two other informed teams, but they're not like imperial teams. We're talking anyone could win this year. Like a little run from Zagreb and there you go. Zagreb are champions 2024.
Kurt Schaefer is going to be absolutely creaming himself listening to this. Our resident Zagreb fan. Just before we let you go, one more piece of news. And we haven't spoken about Aalborg, who have comfortably, in the end, made it through into the quarterfinal with a game to spare, which I think is great for them when you consider that it's a group with PSG and Kielce in there. But big news from them is that Stefan Madsen will be leaving the club at the end of the season. And this comes back to a chat we had a couple of weeks ago when they had lost the cup final against GOG. And it was kind of highlighted that, you know, since all the money has come in, since the big signings have come in, Aalborg haven't won anything. And Stefan Madsen was having success with this team with its, let's say, original form, with good players, but not huge names. And he said now that he's going to leave at the end of the season and pursue other challenges.
Yeah, I don't know how much it was his choice to leave. It was before his contract is up, so he's leaving early. But it's true. You know, I think they have underperformed and Stefan Madsen has been there. He's brought this club to where it is. And, you know, this year, you know, they've been good in the Champions League and they're looking good all around, actually. And they've been dominant in Denmark. But it's time for him to move on. There's been a lot of candidates that have been mentioned who are kind of set up as potential replacements for Madsen in Aalborg. The leading candidate being Mike Machula, who was the former Flensburg manager. He's without a job at the moment. I think that's a good pairing. Other names mentioned, Magnus Andersson, the former Porto coach, who is currently without a job, as well as Glenn Solberg and Gudjon Sigurdsson, other names who've been mentioned. And the last one, again, TV2 is the source for all of this, is Christian Schelling, the Norwegian commentator.
Yeah, well, that's there could be a race on there because he's also, I think, touted by some as the guy who should take over the Norway job. Well. So question whether he'll take Norway first or whether he'll take Aalborg. Christian Schelling, who we had on the podcast during Euro 2020 together with his commentary pal Daniel Höglund. Really interesting guy and
very handsome man, Christian Schelling.
Very handsome. So handsome. And apparently he's raising a son who is going to be one of the best players in the world. He's just 15 at the moment and confident that he is maybe the next Sander Sagosen. I'm not sure if I should be saying this. Is this public knowledge? It will be soon. If so, you heard it here first. Yeah, it's kind of a pity. I think Stefan Madsen he's been with Aalborg in one capacity or another since 2015, so a long time, and is clearly a very good coach. I mean, what he did with them, bringing them to the final of the Champions League, is remarkable. As you said, they've been dominant this season in Denmark, could still bring them to a Final Four this year. They're on course at the moment. So I hope, in his case, that it is a little bit his decision and not that he's being
nudged out the door. But maybe we'll learn more about that as time goes on.
I think we can leave it there. So exciting times in the Champions League. We'll have a podcast coming your way, a broad one with a very exciting interview this week. We also have Morning Club. So sign up for the Patreon if you haven't done it yet. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.